guys, welcome back to Jewels on the Hustle. It has been a minute since we've done a solo podcast, so here we are. You guys are stuck with me. I apologize. Next week, I will have another guest on, but this week we will be summing up and kind of wrapping up a wonderful 2 weeks in the bubble at the US Open. So, you may be wondering where I disappeared off to last week. I had Labor Day seasickness, which wasn't great. I went on my second boat ride ever. Yes, second boat ride ever. You heard me. And it was a kind of smaller boat. It was a little choppy. I personally didn't know I would have needed, you know, some patches behind my ears, but, you know, I did have a hard time after, but I wouldn't take back that experience. We were up in Lake George. It was so, so gorgeous. And, you know, next time I'll be more prepared, but that's kind of where I've been. Just trying to heal up some vertigo and going to a bunch of different doctors. So, you know, that's done. Feeling good now. 2 weeks in the bubble finished at the US Open in Flushing Meadows. So let's just dive in. So there were a lot of great tennis matches the last 2 weeks. A lot of great playing, some weirdness. I don't know how you guys felt, but the virtual fans were kind of bizarre to me. The one good thing was, I'll tell you, is when a point was over, I was worried that, you know, like you play a good point and then you're listening on TV and it's just like dead silence after. I was so worried about that. I thought that would be like extremely bizarre. But I have to say that the virtual fans did help in that regard. Like, I was watching the final, Team and Zverev, and when I heard clapping, even though it was virtual fans, like it sounded a little bit more normalized. Without the fans, the virtual fans, it would have sounded weird. But in general, I don't know, having video of fans cheering through whatever Zoom or FaceTime was kind of, you know, it took some time for me to get used to. I'm sure the players liked it. They liked that attention and all that they weren't getting really from real people. So I guess Zoom is second best. But another kind of controversial topic has been, does this US Open count as much as another US Open? So basically, you know, Federer wasn't in, Nadal wasn't in, and people were like, well, does that, and plus COVID. So people were saying, is it actually a meaningful Grand Slam? Now, I know my thoughts. So I was talking to a couple of other girls and they said, no, like if you win, it's not as, you know, great, not as important. The US Open is known like to be one of the strongest grands, one of the strongest tournaments in general. All Grand Slams are equally competitive. But when you don't have some of the greats of the tournament, does it still feel as good? Now, I don't understand how anyone can say no. Like, I understand their point, but I don't agree. That's what I should say. I don't agree. If you win the freaking US Open, I'm sorry. I don't care if I don't play a match the whole time. If you win the US Open, you win the US Open. That's it. Like, are you guys on my side or not my side? It's not a competition, but like, what do you guys think? I'm so interested to hear your thoughts and opinions because to me, like, there's still enough great players in the draw. Like, so what? Roger Federer and Nadal weren't in. And then, I mean, Djokovic was in. We didn't know that all that drama would go down. We'll go into that in a few minutes. But to me, it's like, to get into the US Open, it is such an honor. That means, you know, you've worked your butt off for a long time. You've earned that honor of being in such a small draw. It's the world's best players. And if you make it, you deserve it. And whoever doesn't want to come, you know, kind of like their loss, whether the reason is their injury, COVID, just if they don't want to go for whatever reason, like it, to me, it just doesn't matter. So let me know what you guys think. And I'm very interested. 10 days ago, I was on a show called The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks. It's on ESPN Radio 98.7 FM in New York. And it's a show about like betting, wagers, odds. And I went on, obviously, to discuss tennis in the U.S. Open. She wanted to get my thoughts and who I thought would win on the women's side, on the men's side, break down some matches and whatnot. On the girls' side, I said, look, Anita, I'm feeling either Kenin, Azarenka, Serena, and Osaka. Those were my four. I knew that Kenin had that fire in her. Whether she was playing as well as, you know, she had in Australia, that, you know, didn't seem like she was to me. But I knew she could get better match by match. She does have that confidence from winning Australia. Yes, time has passed. Yes, COVID hit. Momentum was broken. But I did think she had a good shot. Now, Serena, my take on her is pretty similar. I didn't think that she was playing that great either. But sometimes, you know, experience is just much more important in such a big tournament than how you're playing. It's how you really deal with the big moments, how you deal with the pressure. And so you feel like someone that's had more success either more times or more recently would come through. And so those were my thoughts on both Serena and Kenin. Who did I think was playing the best? I'd say Osaka and Azarenka. And I was glad to see them playing each other in the final. Azarenka obviously... Well, actually, Azarenka played Naomi, was supposed to play Naomi in the Western and Southern Open final the week prior to the U.S. Open. And, of course, Osaka withdrew with an injury. Now, that was also interesting because I was worried that player... You know, it's interesting. I keep cutting off my trains of thoughts. But Osaka and Azarenka made it to the end of the Western and Southern Open. But people, including myself, were concerned that, you know, players would be tired. Because think about it. That's like 3 long weeks. If you make it to the end of the Western and Southern Open and then the end of the U.S. Open, that's 3 weeks of grinding. So that was, I don't know, really nice to see. And it was kind of cool how, you know, the final was kind of repeated. And since, you know, the one before wasn't played, and obviously they each got to bring home one first place trophy. So I enjoyed that match a lot. And from the get-go, I told Anita on the show, I said, Naomi is on fire on her forehand, backhand serve. And it's really nice to see her transitioning to the net. So she's playing super solid on every wing, every part of the game. She looks focused and she's just zoned in. I was even telling Anita that I think no fans is working in her favor. You guys tell me what you think, but in my opinion, she gets, no one take this the wrong way. I feel like she gets a little cute in front of fans. Like, she tries to put on a little bit of a show, and that's so normal. When you're playing in front of thousands of people, of course, you're gonna, you know, act or become a little bit different. Unless you're Roger Federer, he's just like a natural born performer. He's just like so good, no matter who or whatever. Well, anyway, I'm fangirling right here. But Osaka, I do believe the no fans worked in her favor. She just seemed focused. And obviously the big thing for her was one mask. She was wearing a mask on her face for every match for Black Lives Matter. Each mask, each round had a different name on it. And she was using her platform, which, you know, has 1.5 million people following on Instagram and then hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. When you have such a big platform, it does mean a lot if you use your voice. And obviously she has a connection. Her father is from the Caribbean. Her mother is from Japan. So she's mixed. And she's using her voice. And another player that's using their voice, too, is Coco Gauff. What's interesting about Gauff, she's so young. Even though she's so young, she sounds like, you know, she's like 30. Like, she's so mature and really on top of it. You know, she speaks at protests. Her and Osaka, to me, are leading the game as far as on that. In that regard. And go back to the Western and Southern Open. Remember, Osaka was going to withdraw from the semifinal against Mertens. That would have given Elise Mertens a walkover. So everyone is, it's pretty funny actually. People were like, First time in history someone's been able to withdraw twice from a tournament. She withdrew in the semis, and then they decided to put a day of pause into effect for tennis. So then she was back in the draw, and she won that match. And then in the final, she withdrew. But this time she didn't play. So it's like only a great, great, great player would be able to withdraw twice. And, you know, so it was kind of cool. And just to see them speaking up, it's interesting and awesome. It's interesting because the younger players of the sport are kind of taking over. What I'm wondering is Serena Williams. Now, she's been around for a long time, obviously. She's so focused on getting that 24th Grand Slam, tying Margaret Court's record. Will she get there? I don't know, and I'll let you know in a sec why. But I'm wondering, why isn't she using her voice that much? Maybe she feels like either A, she wants to give others the opportunity, or B, she's just so honed in on winning and she just wants to, you know, kind of cut out the noise and focus. So I don't know, just my thoughts. Okay, so Serena Williams, she's obviously one Grand Slam away from tying the record of Grand Slams with Margaret Court. And then she's one away from breaking the record. If you guys want my honest opinion, I think the way things are going right now, she won't get there. You can see she's not enjoying it. I'm going to just flat out say the honest truth. I don't see her enjoying it. It's for her, it's either win or nothing. Like, you make it to the finals of a Grand Slam, finals of a tournament, to her, that's nothing. She's one goal in mind. And when you think like that, and while I understand why she's thinking like that, you're not going to do well. Tennis is way, it's just too many variables, too much up and down. It's about who's playing better that day. To put that pressure, not that she can't handle it, but it's just, there's just too many variables to be thinking about and to put on yourself. So I think that, you know, she has a 3-year-old daughter. She's, you know, married. I think the only way she'll get there is if she kind of just starts enjoying the process more of getting there. She's going to have to look at, you know, good results as accomplishments and not so much as failures, in my opinion. And I know this is very controversial. It's a very sensitive topic. We all want her to get there. We're living in a historical era, not only with COVID, but with Serena freaking Williams. She's the best female, in my opinion. I don't care how many Grand Slams she's won, how many titles. I don't care if Margaret Court is ahead of her. In my opinion, she's the best female or, you know, athlete ever. Okay, that's an aggressive statement. Okay, best tennis player ever, if we're being honest. Like, will she beat Roger Federer out on the court? Absolutely not. But she's just has done so much for the game and to the game and in the game that it just makes me feel that way. So what I'm wondering is, would she be able to kind of compartmentalize, you know, having a family, doing well, succeeding and winning? Will she be able to not worry so much about the winning? While, yes, she probably wants to win quicker so she can retire faster. I don't know. It's tough. It's really tough. And obviously I can't relate, and no player in the world can relate to what she's trying to do. But I gotta think that people are telling her that the only way she's gonna do it is if she starts enjoying it. Did you guys see that match against Maria Sakkari at the Western and Southern Open? Guys, that was the most painful thing ever. Like, it made me sad. She won the first set, right? And then she loses the second set 7-6. And I kid you not, that third set was like torture. She looked tortured. First of all, I can say this because I've done this before. I've seen this before. She didn't try. I'm sorry. She didn't try. And she looked so miserable. She looked like she just didn't want to retire because she didn't want that label on her, or, you know, for people to be like, oh, you quit because you lost a second set. But no, she was just kind of rolling with the punches, but in a bad way, because she just wasn't trying. I'm going to say that. She was tanking. She tanked. It was funny, though. She had to play Sakari in the U.S. Open in the quarterfinals. And what happens? She wins the first set. She loses the second set 7-6 again. Can anyone say deja vu? Yeah, deja vu. But then this time she won the third set. So, I don't know. That was kind of cool how things came full circle. And I think two things. One, she was like, okay, I can't let this happen again. I really probably embarrassed myself, embarrassed my coach and my family. And two, the Grand Slam, obviously much bigger towards her goals of 24 and also more money. Yeah, she doesn't probably need it, but it's still in the back of everyone's mind. So will Serena get to 24? I think time will tell, but not really by the way she's playing. Because if you ask me, she was playing some damn good tennis, especially in the semifinals in the first set against Victoria Azarenka. That was lights out. But she's going to have to kind of enjoy the process. Jewels on the hustle. Gamma on the hustle. We needed a tennis equipment brand that was on our level. Behold, Gamma Sports. Gamma offers the best tennis strings and grips in the industry, along with a full line of training, court and stringing equipment. Even 40 years later, there are patent processes, superior design, and string technology gives players a distinct edge over the competition. You know why? Because Gamma understands that athletes have a lifelong need to grow, perform, and strive for excellence. So guys, go to GammaSports.com and use my code JULES20, J-U-L-E-S, 20 for 20% off your purchase. I've been using Gamma for 15 plus years and it has changed my game. Gamma will never stop innovating and improving their technology, and that will enhance your game. So what are you waiting for?
I'd like to say, though, how cool was it that we had Serena Williams, Victoria Azarenka, and Pironkova all in the quarterfinals. Three moms. Three out of the eight players were moms. Like, that to me is so cool because it just further shows you that the age of tennis is getting older. You know, you don't have to be at your prime when you're 18. For me, when I was a teenager, my coaches, my family told me, if you don't make it when you're young, you're not going to ever make it. Don't go to college. Because if you do, you're going to lose out on your time. Now the best tennis, guys, is at 30, 35, 36. How great. This is so reassuring and encouraging to so many players, so many females out there. They can have lives. So many times you think as a tennis player, you can't have a life outside of tennis. You can't have relationships. You can't attend family functions, you can't go on trips, you can't go to college because of just the time commitment to tournaments, to training. But now more than ever, you totally can do all that. We have three mamas with beautiful children in the draw in the quarterfinals of the 2020 US Open. This is so encouraging. I can't begin to tell you. Okay, we need to dive into the Novak Djokovic incident because that was insane, and some would even say that highlighted the US Open in probably not the most positive light, but in the most, oh my gosh, light. What the heck, though? That was weird. So, here are my thoughts. I did not see it live, unfortunately. I was in Lake George, so maybe not unfortunately. But I've been there. Yeah, I've been there. I didn't hit a lines person, but I did almost hit a lines person, and I got a warning because I didn't hit the lines person. But if I was an inch away from hitting the lines person, guys, you know where I would have been? Off the court, out of the draw.
That's just the rule. I hate to tell you, but that's the rule. You know, everyone's like, oh, it was an accident. Of course it was an accident. You could see his face. He knew the second happened. He was like, oh my gosh, I'm screwed. He ran back, helping the poor lady. You know, I've seen it all. I've heard it all. So much hate or comments about this lady exaggerated. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if she exaggerated. The rule is, if you hit someone on the court, you know, you're done. And now people are saying, you know, Roger Federer hit a ball kid. Yeah, I don't know what Roger did. And I'm not really worried because Roger's more like the exception, not the rule. I know why they did that, guys. Like, let's say they let him play.
If they let him play, it would have set a horrible example. Like, everyone would be just losing their minds out on court. Like, tennis is already a grind, and we already get frustrated. So, in the back of our minds, when we're playing, we're like, okay, we can't do anything stupid. We're going to have to suffer the consequences, fines, or just, you know, just get in trouble and whatnot. So, at least knowing that there are guidelines, there are rules, like in the back of our minds, we have to keep it together. So this is basically, while it wasn't such a big deal, it's setting an example for the Nick Kyrgioses of the world. I just had to. Like, can you imagine if Novak Djokovic didn't get in trouble for that? You'd see like Nick next month just like blasting balls at everyone. Like, I know that that's mean to point him out, but it's kind of the truth. Like, let's be honest. So this was more of setting the tone, setting an example for the future. So while that's said and done, I really did appreciate the way Djokovic, you know, dealt with it. He was more mature. You know, Djokovic does have anger problems. It's a well-known thing. It's no hidden secret that he does get a little extra heated on court. I remember, like, his first or second round, he starts screaming at his box or, like, to himself in an empty Arthur Ashe Stadium, which was one of the most awkward things I've ever seen. Like, for those of you that have never been to Arthur Ashe Stadium, it is mega huge. So just to, like, see someone on court just like yelling at themselves like on the top of their lungs just kind of looks funny. So the point I don't agree with is the fact that he didn't get any of his ranking points or money up until that round. Come on. Like, I don't understand what that has to do with all the work he put in up till that point. Because, yeah, he screwed up. He messed up. It was also kind of unlucky. Like, it's so obvious that it wasn't on purpose. And while I'm saying that it doesn't matter if it's on purpose or not, like, should he really just throw away everything he earned? Like, it's obviously not his choice. But that kind of just like puts extra incentive in people to just like behave out on court, because you really have to suffer. You lose your money, you lose your points, you get defaulted. So you, tennis is a grind, though. I'm telling you guys, you'll never know unless you're a player out on tour how hard that is. You're out on your own. You're basically, you're playing for your next meal to a certain extent, because you're playing for a living. And it's the most unstable sport. You're an individual. There's no team. There's no roster. If you're sick or mentally ill, then you can't substitute yourself. So it is a grind. So yeah, that's harsh punishment. Harsh. So I gave you guys my guesses on who would do well on the women's side, my predictions, who I had my money on. But on the men's side, I had Djokovic, Thiem, Medvedev, and Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas was eliminated earlier, and then we all know what happened to Novak. It was down to Thiem and Medvedev, and Thiem obviously beat him in the semis. But then it was Thiem and Alexander Zverev. Who in the world expected that one? What's interesting about Zverev is he fights so hard. He's great groundies, has a good complete game except for his serve. I respect the guy. You know, on the men's side, it feels like all the guys just have such solid serves and like really rely on them to come through in like the tight moments. And while Zverev, you know, he does have a good serve, it's just not one that he's confident in. He gets nervous. He does throw in a lot of double faults, especially in early parts of the match. Like, he'd play 2-3 games, service games, and he'd have, you know, two to three doubles per game. So it's really nice to see a player that, you know, is a little, what's the word, insecure or overthinks a shot that's still able to come through. It's really it's a great example, because if you guys remember when I told you about, you know, some of the hard times in my game, a lot of times for a lot of players, it's like a certain stroke that really gets in their head. So when you see someone making it to the finals of the US Open and almost winning, it's up 2 sets to love and then lost 7-6 in the fifth set. That's a whole nother story, guys. Jeez, 7-6 in the fifth. That one probably stings. Tiebreaker 8-6. So that's no joke. One last guy I want to talk about on the men's side, Felix Auger-Aliassime. This guy is going to be top five very soon. Very, very soon. You heard it here first on Jewels on the Hustle. This guy is going to be a legend. He's got it all. He's tall. He's like has a great serve, great groundies, great volleys, strategically plays amazingly, and has that confidence, has that X factor. He's from Canada, although he doesn't seem like he's Canadian, but just remember where you heard this. He is the next big thing. The last topic I want to get into, because this is kind of funny, it's how, since there were no fans at Ash, all the suites had seated players in their suites. Now, you think it's nerve-wracking playing in front of thousands of Grey Goose, honeydews, melon honeydews, whatever that U.S. Open drink is? You think that's intimidating to play in front of thousands of people that probably don't know much about tennis, are so wasted, half dazed in, half out, coming from a long day at work, probably falling asleep on the chair? You think that's more intimidating? Or playing in front of these competitors, your rivals, them staring you down while they bite into their sushi roll? You hit a serve and they're like, oh, she got worse during quarantine. I'll never forget. They kept on the ESPN, they kept showing Zverev shirtless while he was eating sushi. And I was like, Jesus, like, not the shirtless part, but the fact that, you know, someone's like such a beast is watching you play. Like, that is so intimidating. I remember, like, Kenin was playing Leila Fernandez, and it was like Sloane Stephens, Kim Clijsters, Serena Williams, Zverev, and team watching. Like, oh my gosh. It's one thing if they watch like through TV, but to see them like there physically, bye-bye. Hello, my hustlers. Boy, do I have some great news for you. So the other day I was practicing with this girl and her eyelash falls off mid-practice. That's right, her lash popped off. And I thought, Julia, what are you going to do? And that's when I turned to Play Your Court, because you get to play more tennis and improve your game while the tennis is brought to you. You get set up with practice partners nearby that are similar in level. So that's right for all you lazy folks thinking, I don't want to drive far to practice. Well, no excuses. You get unlimited matches, no drama, and custom video coaching tailored to your needs. So let's say you're having a hard time with your forehand inside out or your serve. Play Your Court has you set. and you actually end up saving more because you get insider pricing on balls, rackets, grips, shoes, string, bags, apparel, pro tickets, and more from the top tennis brands. All you have to do is go to playyourcourt.com and answer a few easy questions about what you are looking for. Use my code, you're welcome, capital Julia, J-U-L-I-A, all caps, and you get 50% off your yearly subscription of $49.99. And just monthly, you can get it for $5.99. Again, you're welcome. Follow them on Instagram and Twitter at PlayYourCourt and their YouTube page, PlayYourCourt. You are welcome. Ball out, guys. All right. Well, that's another episode of Jules on the Hustle. I hope you guys enjoyed this recap. If there are any US Open topics that I missed, please feel free to email me at julesonthehustlepodcast@gmail.com or write a review with your question or something you'd like me to discuss. Reach me on Instagram and Twitter at JulesElBaba. I open all my DMs, all of them. So if you don't get a response, it probably means that I didn't want to respond. Doesn't mean that I didn't see it. But that's beside the fact. Anyways, guys, I hope you enjoyed this one. I am about to go watch Dancing with the Stars with Tyra Banks because that seems weird and interesting and weird again. But well, 1 week away from French Open with 100% capacity. Yikes, 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 yikes. Anyone else thinking yikes? That'll be interesting. I wonder how many COVID cases go through that tournament. It doesn't seem very safe to me. But I will see you guys next time. I'm sorry. I feel so weird today. I'm half exhausted, half kind of just really excited that we got through a Grand Slam without too much drama, but then also like pretty hyped up for next week for the French Open. And I don't know. It'll be interesting. And you guys know where to get all your coverage from right here. We will be having a special guest on next week, though. We'll not be saying who it is. So make sure you subscribe so you know when I put out my next episode. I hope everyone has a wonderful week, and I will see you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle. All right, take care, guys.